I've used the word devoted like Daniel. I kind of toyed with what should I say, devoted like Daniel or dedicated like Daniel. And I don't, you know, both of those words kind of carry a similar idea with them, but I finally went with devoted, and I don't know why. I just finally went with that particular one. But we're talking about being devoted to God, being dedicated to God, putting God first in your life, in everything, and showing that in the way that you live your life. And we're going to see that as we look at Daniel. Of course, we have the picture here of him as an older man in the lion's den. What a difficult situation that must have been for him as an old man to be thrown in there with those lions. Wonder how it would have been when he was young. I know Xander preached a sermon for us a couple summers ago about Daniel and prayer. And certainly Daniel's prayer life is a strong one. And we will mention that briefly, although that's not the subject of this particular lesson, but we will look at it just briefly. So to be devoted like Daniel, we need to do these seven things. And I had trouble limiting it. I think I could have come up with 17 things probably if I'd tried very hard. But we want to focus on just a few of these things. First of all, to be devoted like Daniel, we need to learn God's law and train our consciences. You know, sometimes we assume that we're just born with a conscience, that we just have it, and, you know, it's just what it is, but it has to be trained. We see that because, and we know that consciences, different people, you know, some people don't, it doesn't bother their conscience when they do things that are wrong, because their conscience has never been trained and taught that those things were wrong. So the conscience is not quite the same as an instinct, as we might say. It's a little different. And if we learn God's law and then train our consciences according to His law, we will not offend. And our conscience will be right. It's sad because some people's consciences have been trained to be overly sensitive to things that are not sinful. And people feel guilty sometimes when they do things, even though those things aren't wrong. For example, you know, you may have someone in your family who's an alcoholic or a drug addict or something of that nature, and they may constantly be maybe just a bum that's in your family or you're in your extended family somewhere, and they come wanting you to help them, and they want money, and they want that. And sometimes, if our consciences aren't trained properly, we'll feel guilty for not giving that drug addict or that alcoholic in our family money. But if we really think about it, we know, well, giving them money is not going to help them. That's not a good thing. They'll just go buy drugs or go buy alcohol and get drunk again. And that's not going to be good for them. That wouldn't be helping them. But still, when they ask us and beg, and we feel guilty sometimes. Well, that's an example of our conscience being trained wrongly. It's not the proper training. If it was trained properly, we would understand that, hey, giving that person money that's going to then just feed their sinful habit is not a good thing. That would be the thing we should avoid. That's the thing we shouldn't do. And so that's why I talk about training our conscience to know right and wrong, to know God's law and to know what He expects of us. In all kinds of situations, the big thing with people with situational ethics, that, oh, well, it depends on the situation. I even had a young man in Bible class one time. I was teaching a teenage Bible class years ago, and this young man grew up going to the church his whole life. And we were talking about Joseph, and we were talking about Joseph and Potiphar's wife, and how Joseph knew it was wrong to sleep with Potiphar's wife, and so he resisted that, and he shunned that. And this young man who had grown up in the church said, but it would have been all right if he loved her, though, wouldn't it? He didn't know God's law. He didn't understand a thing that he should have understood by his age. And so we need to learn God's law. We need to teach young people God's law. And we need to train our consciences and help young people train their consciences to know the difference in right and wrong so that we understand, no, it would have been wrong for Joseph to sleep with another man's wife whether he loved her or not. It wasn't relevant. It was another man's wife. He didn't have any right to her, no matter what he felt about it. But that's one of the things, feelings have kind of overwhelmed knowledge and reason in our society today. So we have to watch out for that. In Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 through 8, Daniel is introduced to us. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God, and he brought them to the land of Shinar. That ought to sound familiar to you. That's where the Tower of Babel was. To the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. And then the king commanded Ashpenaz and his chief eunuch to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, and learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans, or the Babylonians. And so the king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food. Now one of the things involved with this king's food was probably this food had been sacrificed, especially the meats would have been sacrificed to the Babylonian idols, to their gods. And so Daniel was not going to defile himself. It's also possible, you know, the Jews had a very strict code that they were not to eat the blood, that they were to, when they killed an animal, they were to drain the blood, and then they could eat the meat. And so it's very possible that these animals were not killed in the right way. They were strangled and the blood left in them instead of having their throat cut or whatever to have them to bleed. And so these were things that to a Jewish person would defile them. It would be a violation of God's law. And Daniel knew that, and he resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank, that he would not drink that and become drunken and those kinds of things as well. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. So here's Daniel in this odd situation, and you know, we have to say, well, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, right? Well, so Daniel, you're in Babylon, and this is the way the Babylonians are. You should just go along with them and do it their way. But Daniel said, no, I know God's law. My conscience has been trained not to violate God's law and to eat those things that were offered to idols, that were killed in the wrong manner, that the blood still in the meat and the wine would make me drunk. I'm not going to do those things. I'm not going to do the things that would violate my conscience and break God's law. And so Daniel determined that first. We need to learn God's law. A lot of times people don't know what to do when a situation comes before them. They don't know what's the right or the wrong thing to do because they haven't learned God's law and they haven't trained their conscience. We need to learn God's law and train our consciences so that that's not a problem for us. Secondly, to be like Daniel and to be devoted like him, we need to give God the credit he deserves. If you remember, there was a king, King Herod in the New Testament, one of the King Herods, there were several, but one of the King Herods in the New Testament in the book of Acts who died because he took credit for being like God. They said, oh, that's not the voice of a man, that's the voice of a God. And he accepted that praise and that worship, if you will, and because of that, God struck him dead. Daniel had amazing abilities. He could interpret dreams. But he knew that those abilities were not his own, that they came from God, and he gave God credit. In Daniel chapter 1 and verse 20, it says, first of all, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about the which the king inquired of them, he found them, this is Daniel and his three friends, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom. 10 times better than the best? That's pretty good, isn't it? You don't run across that very often, that there's somebody that's 10 times better than everybody else. But that's what Daniel and his friends were. It would have been easy for them to get rather arrogant about that, wouldn't it? They could have been really snotty about, we're better than everybody else. But Daniel didn't do that. He's going to give credit to God. Notice chapter 2, verses 27 through 30. Daniel answered the king and said, no wise men, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show the king the mystery that the king has asked. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. And he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head as you lay in your bed are these. To you, O king, as you lay in your bed came thought of what would be after this. And he who reveals mysteries made known to you what is to be. But as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me not because of my wisdom that I have more than others, but in order that the interpretation may be made known to the king and that you may know the thoughts of your mind. And so he gives credit to God. He says, it's not because I'm so wise. God gave this to me to tell you so that you would know. God's doing this. God gave you the dream. God gave me the interpretation of the dream so you would know what was going on, King. And Daniel shows that, and he gives God the credit that he deserves. We need to be sure we do that as well. When we have abilities, I was talking to somebody just the other day, they were talking about some friend of theirs that used to be a really religious person. But they got so wrapped up in themselves, they got into fitness, which there's nothing wrong with getting into fitness, but that fitness became their God. And they go all over the country doing these different, you know, like Ironman competitions or something, you know, and doing all these events and training people to be athletic and fit. And they left God behind when they did that. That became their new God. And so we've got to be sure that we give God the credit. We would have no strength. We wouldn't be able to walk. We wouldn't be able to breathe. We wouldn't be able to do anything. We couldn't think. We couldn't reason. We couldn't do anything if it weren't for God giving us the ability to do those things. And I don't mean in some, you know, miraculous way, but He's given all of us as human beings certain abilities and gifts and talents that we need to take advantage of. But we couldn't do any of these things unless God allowed it. And so we need to give Him the credit for whatever we have. And, you know, sometimes we say, well, when we're not well, we're sick, or we've got this problem or that problem, now, then we want to blame God for it, but we don't want to give Him credit when we get better and when things are going well. All right, let's move on to number three then. We need to be obedient to authority. If we're going to be devoted to God, then we're going to have to also be obedient to those in authority over us. And this has to do with whether it's children with their parents, whether it's wives being in submission to their husbands, whether it's the church being submissive to the eldership that's over them, whether it's the church being submissive to Christ, whether it's Christ being submissive to God, whether it's us being submissive to the Word of God, whether it's us and the civil authorities. We need to obey anyone who's in a position of authority over us, anyone who has this position of power and authority, because it is designated by God that these things be in a certain way. Now, sometimes people overstep their authority, and we'll talk about that actually in just a moment, but Daniel was obedient to the authority over him. In Daniel 4 and verse 19, Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was dismayed for a while, and his thoughts alarmed him. The king answered and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation alarm you. Belteshazzar answered and said, my lord, may the dream be for those who hate you and its interpretation for your enemies. Now remember, this is the king who had captured him and taken him as a slave, as a young man. And yet he is submissive to that king's authority, And as the king has a dream that's a bad dream, Daniel says, oh, it'd be better if this was for your enemies. It shouldn't be for you. Then in Daniel 5, in verses 16 and 17, the king comes to him again, but I've heard that you can give interpretation and solve problems. Now, if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, this was actually Belshazzar, not to be confused with Daniel's name, Belteshazzar. This was Nebuchadnezzar's son, who was taking his place for a time in the kingdom during the time when things were going badly. But he was in that position of the king, but he was still only second in command because he offers Daniel to make him third in command. He'll be the third ruler in the kingdom if he can interpret this dream. Now, Daniel could have said, no, I'm not going to interpret this dream for you. But instead, he says, let your gifts be for yourself and give rewards to another. Nevertheless, I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. He was obedient. He was called to do this interpretation. He obeyed. He did what he was asked to do. Daniel 6, verses 21 and 22. After the lion's den that we see here, Daniel comes out and says, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth, and they have not harmed me because I was found blameless before him and also before you, O king. I have done no harm. So he was able to say to the king, I've been obedient to you. I've submitted to your authority. I've done you no harm throughout my years with you. And so, now, of course, you know, sometimes we may forget when we look at the book of Daniel, there are actually three different kings that Daniel has dealings with here. There's Nebuchadnezzar, there's Belshazzar, and then there's Darius later on. So there's three different ones that he deals with. And with each of the three, he submits to their authority. He doesn't say, oh, I got to go to that one or this one. He submits to each one and does what he's told to do. We need to be obedient to authority, just like Daniel, if we're going to be devoted to God. And we need to give our best. Daniel never shirked his responsibility. He gave his best. In fact, so much so that in Daniel chapter 6, verses 3 through 4, then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Then the high officials and the satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom, but they could find no ground for complaint. Wow, wouldn't that be something to be able to say? That if people were looking for something to complain about with you, they couldn't find any ground for complaint or any fault, because he was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. That's a pretty impressive statement. I bet there aren't a lot of politicians today that you could say that about. And that's really what Daniel was in, a political position. He was in a position of secular leadership in this kingdom. Oh, I wish we had some Daniels in our country today. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't we have a better government and a better system of authority if they were more like Daniel? But then notice also in verses 21 and 22 of the same chapter, again we read earlier, he says that the reason God spared him from the lion's den was because he was blameless before God and before the king. He had done no harm. Now, that brings us to the thing that actually got Daniel into trouble with the king. Not because the king wanted it that way, but just because, well, even kings are naive sometimes and get tricked. And this particular king did. But the next thing we want to notice is, if we want to be devoted like Daniel, we need to pray without ceasing. We need to pray. And we need to be praying. And when we say pray without ceasing, of course the phrase from the New Testament and Thessalonians, pray without ceasing doesn't mean that we're praying every minute of every day, all day long. You know, that'd be all we'd be able to do. We wouldn't be able then to talk to anybody about the gospel. We wouldn't be able to do other good deeds. We wouldn't be able to sleep if we had to pray without ceasing, because as soon as we fell asleep, we'd stop praying. And that's not what it means. It means don't stop praying. Don't quit. It doesn't mean that every moment of every day is a prayer, but it just means don't ever cease, don't ever stop doing that spiritual activity on a regular basis. And so Daniel was like that. Daniel obviously didn't pray every minute of every day either, but he did pray continually. He continued to pray day in and day out throughout his life. And that's the thing that we have to consider. Daniel 2 and verses 17 and 18. Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions. This was the first dream that Nebuchadnezzar had when he said, "Oh, hey, I had a dream. Now I want you to tell me what it was." See, this is a way to really find out. You know, as I think about these people, psychics and everything, I've always wanted to call up one of those psychic lines and they answer the phone and say, "Who is this?" And I could say, "Well, you're the psychic. You tell me." Of course, now with caller ID, they could probably do that. You know, they have to call from a payphone or something. You know, but I've always thought, if you're really a psychic, if you really know these things of the inner thoughts of my mind, then how come you can't tell me these things? Why are you asking me for the information? Well, that was what Nebuchadnezzar did to all of his magicians and different soothsayers and prophets and things, is he called them all in. He said, "Look, I had a dream last night. Now, if you'll tell me what the dream was and tell me the interpretation, then I'll know you're for real." And they all said, "Oh, well, now look, if you'll tell us the dream, we'll give you an interpretation." Well, that's easy. Anybody can do that. If somebody tells me their dream, I can give them an interpretation. Now, whether it's right or not, but I could make up an interpretation. But they wanted to know what the dream was. He said, "No, no, no. If you can't tell me the dream, then you're frauds, and I'm going to kill all of you." And so Daniel went to the king. He went to the chief of the eunuchs and had him go to the king on his behalf and say, "Just give me a little time to talk to my God about this, and I'll get back to you." And so then Daniel comes back to, as we know them, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but as Daniel knew them originally, by Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And he told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men in Babylon. And so they prayed to God. They begged God to help them and to save them and to spare them from this fate. In chapter 6 and verse 10 and 11, we see just how strong Daniel's prayer life was. Remember, the people came to the king and said to Darius, "Oh, King, you're so wonderful, you're so great, you're a God. And so, you know what? Nobody should pray to any other man or any other God except for you for 30 days. And the king's like, "Well, I like the sound of that. Ego will get you in so much trouble, won't it?" So the king's like, "Yeah, I'll sign that." And so he signed that into law. Now, the way it works, you know, here in the United States, if somebody signs a law, well, we can just write another law that cancels it out and get rid of it. With the Medes and the Persians, it didn't work that way. If the king made a law and signed a law, that was it. There was no changing that law. And so he made the law that for 30 days, if you prayed to anybody else or any other god other than him, you get thrown to the lions. In Daniel chapter 6, verses 10 and 11, when Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before God as he had done previously. That law didn't change Daniel's devotion to God. And this shows us just how devoted he was. And of course, the men that had made the agreement found Daniel praying to God, and of course they turned him in. And of course he was thrown in the lion's den. In Daniel 9, 4 and 5, "I prayed to the Lord my God and made confession, saying, O Lord, the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love Him and keep His commandments. We have sinned and done wrong and acted wickedly and rebelled, turning aside from Your commandments and rules." So Daniel shows us the devotion that he had to God to confess. And he confessed his sins, he confessed his nation's sins. He confessed, we haven't been living like we should. That's why we're in captivity in Babylon, because we weren't obeying your commandments and your rules and laws. But he prayed. And these are certainly not all of the prayers of Daniel. There are many, many more prayers, even though there's only a few short chapters in the book of Daniel. Several events take place. There is a lot of his prayers in there, and we're not going to look at all of them today. But we need to pray without ceasing if we're going to be devoted to God like Daniel. You know, it's hard to be close to somebody that you never talked to. You ever notice that? You ever have a friend or a family member that you're separated from for a long time, and then you get back together and you talk for a couple minutes about, you know, well, what have you been doing, and what's been happening, and what about this? And then, oh, remember back when? And then after a while, you're kind of like, what do we have left to talk about? We hadn't talked in so long, we don't really have much to talk about anymore. And sometimes people are like that with God. They don't really have anything to talk to Him about. They haven't seen Him, so to speak, in so long. They haven't been around Him so long. They haven't talked to Him. They haven't studied His Word. They haven't been doing the things that they should for so long that they kind of forget, don't even know what to say to Him anymore. Daniel never had that problem. He could pray to God, and he prayed without ceasing. Of course, this prayer, and especially what he did after the law was signed that said, don't pray to anybody but the king, and he went and prayed to God anyway, brings us to point six. To be devoted like Daniel, we must obey God rather than men. It's the same thing the apostles knew in the first century. It doesn't matter what man commands. Yes, you obey the authority over you, unless they try to take God's place. Nobody can take God's place. It doesn't matter how powerful they think they are. They cannot overrule God's law. And so you must obey God rather than men. And so, again, Daniel 6:5, they said, we're not going to find any complaint against Daniel. Remember, they'd been looking, and they said, we're not going to find any complaint against Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God. If we can figure out some way to set his God's law and our law at odds with each other, we know he'll follow his God, and then we'll have him, because he'll be breaking the law. And that's what they went out to do. And that's why they brought that law before the king, because they knew Daniel. They knew how devoted he was, and they knew he wasn't going to stop praying no matter what. And so they got him. And then, of course, Daniel chapter 6 and verses 10 and 11 again, we see this. When he knew, now remember, this wasn't a sin of ignorance, or he didn't sin at all. He did what God wanted him to do. But this wasn't some illegal activity that he did ignorantly. It wasn't like, you know, well, I didn't know that was wrong. Here in the United States, they say there are so many laws, and most of us, you know, I've seen, they talk about stacks of books to the ceiling, five rows wide, you know, of just the laws that Congress has passed. We don't know those laws. We don't know. They say there's so many laws that the average, quote, law-abiding citizen in the United States breaks 2 to 3 of those laws every day, whether they know it or not. But that wasn't the case here with Daniel. He wasn't unknowingly breaking a law because he didn't know what that law was. He knew the document had been signed. He went to his house and he got down on his knees and he prayed to God. He was making it clear, my devotion, yes, King, I will obey you. Yes, I'll be a good citizen. I'll obey the law. I'm going to be a law-abiding citizen of your kingdom. But my ultimate devotion is to God. And nothing can compromise that. Nothing can change that. Nothing can overrule that devotion. God comes first. And Daniel made it clear that that was the case in his life. And then the final thing we want to notice is that if we're going to be like Daniel, we're going to have to put God above material rewards. Daniel 2 and verse 8, the king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. You know, fame and fortune like that could make a man forget about serving God, make him think, well, I'm pretty important. I don't need God. I've got all these material rewards. But Daniel put God first. And then in Daniel 5, 16 and 17, Belshazzar says to him, I know you can give interpretation and solve problems, so if you'll do this, I'll give you purple and a chain around your neck and I'll make you third ruler in the kingdom. He couldn't make him second because he was second, and he couldn't make him first because his father was first. But he said, I can make you the third most powerful man in the kingdom. And Daniel said, you keep your rewards and things like that to yourself. But look, I'll tell you what the saying says. I'll tell you what it is. Let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. So I'm not going to allow myself to be swayed by material things and allow that to overpower my devotion to God. So we need to be like Daniel. We need to be devoted to learning God's law and training our consciences. We need to give God the credit He deserves and be obedient to the authority over us and always give our best to pray without ceasing and obey God rather than man and to put God above material reward. If you're here this morning and you haven't been doing those things, it's time to grow. It's time to make changes in your life to be more like Daniel in these ways, to be more like the person that God wants you to be. If you have a need to respond to God's invitation this morning, please do so as we stand.